Yes, indeed. Here we go. Another fine day, another fine program. Well, we haven't done it yet, so might not be that fine, John.
Boy, you are resplendent in mauve today, Robert.
Well, our guest today is a resplendent kind of guy, and he spends a lot of his time on an island in the Atlantic Ocean.
Where you're trying to get an invite or what?
Now that you mention it, that never occurred to me, but he has never invited me down to his joint, which I'm sure is more than a one-bedroom condominium.
You think?
I'm guessing.
I thought it was a Sandals. I thought he was staying at a Sandals, you know?
I don't think he's at the Notel Motel. No, I think he has his own shack. Eugene Melnick, for those of you who are going, who the hell are you talking about, is going to join us.
So I thought I'll tell you what,
I'd dress Eugene, in mauve today.
We had Eugene on between seasons and had a great
about
vaccines and about his hockey club. And I'll tell you, for a guy whose team missed the playoffs, he might be one of the happiest owners in hockey.
Well, I think we're going to find that out. And I think he might be. November 15th.
Is that what it was?
I actually looked it up. Yeah.
Boy.
That the owner of the Senators was on with us. And we got some, you know, we talked a fair bit during that show about COVID and his thoughts on COVID as well as hockey.
We're going to revisit
some of the things we discussed. Was this almost 6 months ago?
Yeah.
And address those questions and get some answers again on those topics.
Meanwhile, some really hard-hitting, grilling questions about his team, too.
Well, I'll leave that entirely up to you as the resident hockey puck of this program. Mm-hmm. I don't doubt you've seen more Ottawa Senators games than Eugene Melnick has.
Well, not to derail the conversation, but I love the way his team plays. They were a fun team to watch.
Well, and I will raise this issue with him. The issue for me is we have seen this many times in the past where a team gets off to a terrible start, realizes that it's not going to go anywhere, not going to make the playoffs, and then starts to play like crazy. And you immediately go, okay, the future looks bright, because from this date to this date, they played great, which the Ottawa Senators did. Boy. But then the next year, it doesn't materialize into anything, because there is a difference in playing games that are important versus games that are not important.
Let me put it to you this way, though, Bob. They went 0-9 against the Edmonton Oilers. If they had gone 4-5 against the Edmonton Oilers, they would have come close to being the fourth team in the division going ahead of the Montreal Canadiens.
John, let me use this most perhaps overused phrase. If ifs and buts were candies and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. And you can take any team that doesn't succeed ultimately and find scenarios under which if they'd done this, but the truth of the matter is they did not. What is true is they played very well, well enough to make the playoffs over the last, and I don't even know how many games, 30, 40 games, mm-hmm. would you say?
They were over the last 30 for sure. Now, I'm a cup half full guy and you're a cup half empty guy.
Well, you're in a seven team division where four make the playoffs. You can't be a cup half full with all seven, and that's what you like to be. And all I'm saying
not
is
necessarily.
That, well, all I'm saying is I don't know what this is going to mean for the future. Well, maybe it was a sign that we know it's a young team. This is a young team that is maturing, that is figuring it out, that is getting better. And if they play as well in a full season next year as they did over the last half, let's say, of this year, mm-hmm. they're a playoff team. Mm-hmm. But we don't know that they're going to be able to do that. We don't know how much. What is the impact of playing games when you aren't under pressure to win? And they played no games this year. No games, not a single game that they would have looked in the mirror beforehand and said, we have to win this one. Not one. And ultimately, to be successful, you got to do that.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But we'll see what Eugene says.
So we get I get, you know, the playoffs have started already before the regular season ended. Right. The Canadian division kicks into action tonight, correct? With Edmonton.
Yeah, Winnipeg goes to Edmonton tonight, and then Montreal's in Toronto tomorrow night, Thursday night. Yeah.
I know we've discussed this a little bit, but do you like Edmonton or Winnipeg? I'm pretty sure you like Toronto over Montreal.
Three.
Well, yeah. What about Edmonton, Winnipeg?
I do like Edmonton in this series, simply because I think if you go position by position, the Oilers' key players have been dominant rather than the Jet players. I mean, you got McDavid and Dreisaitl. Darnell Nurse has had a remarkable season. He's probably been the best defenseman of the two teams. And then Mike Smith, who's, you know, older than dirt, has had a remarkable season in goal, and Connor Hellebuck's been up and down. So I do like Edmonton. That said, the Jets have all the pieces. They just haven't been able to put them together, particularly the second half of the season.
Yeah. You know, so. Well, and I mean, at the beginning of the year, you would have said Winnipeg would beat Edmonton handily.
Yes, I would have, and particularly after the trade and getting rid of Patrick Laine for Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Yeah, well, the last 6 weeks, Winnipeg has been a mess. Yeah. And the question is, can you snap your fingers? Can Paul Maurice snap his fingers and shock them out of it? And the answer is, we don't know yet, but we're going to start to find out tonight.
Right.
More on the Stanley Cup playoffs as they progress, of course. But when we come back, the owner of the Ottawa Senators, Eugene Melnyk, will join us when this program continues after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon, as per usual on the program. And with us, the owner of the Ottawa Senators, Eugene Melnyk, joins us once again. November 15th was the last time, Melnyk, you were on this program. You projected your hockey team would be better, but acknowledged they might not be good enough given the quality of the other teams in the Canadian division. And I guess that prophecy played out, except, as John and I discussed, your team played very well over the last half of the season. And now you're stuck with this. Well, does that project into next year? You've been around this long enough. Your team is pretty young. Are you super encouraged? Do you believe your team can take the next step necessary, given what you saw over the last 30 or 40 games?
You know, it's I had a long conversation with the coach, with DJ at the end, just a couple of days ago, and reflected on, okay, so what does this all mean? He gave me one of the best assessments I've ever heard from any coach at any time since I've owned a hockey team, and that includes junior. So I've been at this about almost 24 years, 23 years. And, you know, we went through player by player. What do we need to get there? He basically said, look, we are set for the next 10 years of the team we have, except there's a couple of young ones that need to grow up fairly quickly. We've got some gaps. For example, we need a very good defensive defenseman as a starter. There's two things we need. We need a good defensive defenseman, and we need almost a veteran type center, first line center. And those are obviously not easy to come by. The defenseman, we have one coming, a guy called Sanderson. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be an absolute rock star, that guy. But he's, I think, 18 or something. I mean, he's too young. He should play some games next year with us in the big league. We're hoping that the next year, he's still staying, you know, in college. But, you know, then he'll get into Belleville very quickly, as soon as we can. And just give them a taste. And that's it. And I think next year we should get better. This is a great, great collection of players. And I've seen bad dressing rooms, as everyone has. And this is a group that does exactly what is a coach's dream, and that is they push each other. No, they're young. They all have the same dream, and they're all pulling, and they cajole each other. They can get nasty with each other if they have to, but they don't. And they're friends, and they're all after the same thing. And there's no, there's none of this prima donna stuff. DJ will get rid of these guys so fast, it'll make your head spin. If he sees one guy showing up in a fedora or some kind of hat coming into the dressing room, I mean, he is curtains. He won't even get to the dressing room. And we don't put up with that crap anymore. And we just lay down the law. And it's not like, let's say Lou Lamoriello. I mean, he to me is a piece of work that I actually, it entertains me, but he's got rules in that dressing room.
Oh yes, he does.
You know better than I do. I just heard about this stuff that he's, you gotta have your hair a certain way, you gotta dress a certain way, and none of this baloney walking around with hats and some kind of green shiny suits and stuff, forget about it. So I think the discipline is there. I think the talent is there. The skills are there. The motivation is certainly there. And I think you can't BS these players. They know what they've got around them. And I think we've got a good shot of making the playoffs next year. And it only gets better from there.
Would you as the owner be allowed in the dressing room with the hat you're wearing right now?
Pebble Beach.
I see it's Pebble Beach.
Hey, Eugene, the one thing that Lou does do, and what you're talking about, I think DJ understands that after being around Lou a little bit in Toronto, was he makes the players accountable.
Yeah.
And that's really important. What I want to ask you about is how satisfying is it for you to see a market that not too long ago was very dissatisfied with the way your team played, what was going on with your club? You were getting lambasted personally, and there's a ton of excitement in the capital now. I mean, they are this market's on board. How does that make you feel?
Well, it's, how would you feel if at the end of the day, you put up with all this and knowing full well this is the best thing for the team to do? Mm-hmm. It was not easy. I'm telling you, when you drive into town and there's a billboard telling you to get lost, I mean, it's mm-hmm. tough. Melnick out. There's no other way to say it. Melnick out. Get out. And, the press wasn't happy. They had, a free-for-all on slamming me. And I couldn't even imagine doing this in Toronto with the press there. But, things got a little out of hand at one point. But it's nice to see. I'm not an I told you so person, but I told you so. Just give it time. We just got to do this. And over time, we'll rebuild.
It's funny because you had a corporate event, I want to say 2 years ago at the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
With all of your corporate partners. And you said, listen, we're going to be okay, but we're going to have to be patient. And we're going to have to spend some more money. But you actually told people 2 years ago that this was going to happen.
Right. Well, when you do a rebuild, and it was not just a whimsical thing. We actually sat down and went position by position by position. And I spent 2 days with Pierre Dorion. And it was brutal because I wouldn't let it go. I'd say, well, explain it to me. Well, it's hockey stuff. Explain it to me. I'm not stupid. If I can figure out a molecule, I can figure out a certain type of play. What do you need? Where's the strength? Where's the weaknesses? What do you want to do to the other team? How do you want to play? Do we play the trap from 20 years ago and never have a person buy a ticket again, like New Jersey? Or do you, I remember a player who used to be our captain way back, and his philosophy, he's no longer anywhere near the organization. His philosophy was, everything should be offense. Everything. Just score 5, 6, 7 goals. So you get 4 scored against you, you still win the game. That's another philosophy. And to have a balanced, and Pierre's philosophy was more, you have to balance it. Go the traditionalist route, which was fine with me because that's the one I grew up with and I understood. And then you go position by position. And I think the only place where we failed this year, because we could have gone better, is we made changes to adjust, and that was in goal. We got killed in goal. And you know, you bring in a top guy. Now he's now improved himself a lot. And we're hoping that Murray steps up next year. We need him to. But then you got five little guys, like young kids. And young in goalie is anything under 25 is very young. That's the other thing I kind of learned over the years is until they're 25, 26, they really don't even start getting into their prime. But if Murray can step up and one of the young ones steps up as a good number two, then we got the makings of a true contender. I really believe that. And excuse me. And after that, I've got a bunch of 22-year-olds that aren't even close to their prime. And this is where every franchise wants to be. And we took the hard way up. You know, there's different ways of, I was reading a little bit about climbing Mount Everest, not that I'm doing it, but there's different ways of going up Mount Everest. And there's a real, real tough way where everybody dies. And then there's the easier way, which is almost impossible to do anyways. We went kind of halfway between the two. We didn't take the toughest route, but God damn it, we got rid of every fan favorite, like every one of them. There's nobody left. They're all playing for the teams I'm watching. You know, I'm watching three guys on the Islanders were connected to me. And it's just amazing. Then you see the Vegas game. There's Stone is their captain. You know, you go over to the Islanders. There's three guys there. All around the league, you got passion.
Dare I remind you of the Washington Capitals, where your 40-year-old goaltender has stood on his head for two games. And can you Zdeno imagine? Zdeno Chara is there too.
Yeah, I know all these guys. They say, oh boy, you traded this guy away. Yeah, but you know, I kind of got Stutzla for that. And you know, it was going to be an all-star within 3 or 4 years. It's easy to look in hindsight at some trades that were done that were good and bad. And I think I got to say that I think we're on the plus side of that column. I believe we are.
You do have to sign these kids, though. Sorry. Eugene, you do have to sign them. Like, you're going to have to sign Brady, who, by the way, at this point in right now, might be one of my favorite players to watch in the game.
He's good. Yeah, I know.
Oh, boy. But you have to sign. You got another contract that you have to sign him to. It's going to be hard.
Well, it's not hard if you both agree. Look, I think we're on the same planet with Brady's agents and him. And we think that we really believe that he is a leader of the team and is a pivotal part for us. But these things come down to sometimes things that we can't even understand. Mm-hmm. And it's not money. It's something in their heads that somehow they want to do something else. But it's not the case with Brady. I think all it is with us is the season's now over. Everybody's going away. Think about it, and we'll come back. And I don't foresee a problem with signing Brady. I don't. But, you know, 5 years from now, we're going to be running into some serious we're not going to be cap issues. We're going to try to avoid cap issues. And financial issues will not be a problem either. Right. But, you know, you could have five guys like Brady that you got to sign.
Yep.
And it's no different than Leafland right now. You know, you got some real big money in the top four or five guys. And when you've got four or five superstars, that's what you run into.
Does that mean Brady's the captain? You're going to make him the
captain?
Oh,
I didn't say that. No, not at all. That's going to be, you know, what we're all thinking about over the summer and whether he's the person for that. It would have to be someone, whoever it is, they've got to be around for long term. That's the key for us. You can't have a captain there on a bridge contract. It's not going to happen. But he, along with Thomas Chabot, they're both leaders. They're both leaders in the dressing room, which is what you're looking for. And I've been there deep in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and that's when these guys really shine. It's not the game in January that matters. It's when you get into these playoffs, it's when the leadership shows up. And they bet if they're not there, you're done. You're going to be wiped out so quick and make your head spin.
With Eugene Melnyk, you know, talking about captaincy, I've had this conversation more than a few times over the years. I'm not a big believer in the influence of a captain in professional sports. I think that has changed dramatically since when, you know, the three of us were watching the game as younger people. You know, when George Armstrong was the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Jean Béliveau with the Montreal Canadiens, the sense was that they actually were the leaders. They were the guys. It was an era when, and we all know, the captain was the guy who was supposed to talk to the referees. If you didn't have a C or an A on your uniform, you weren't supposed to talk to the referees.
That's right.
I mean, all that has changed. We get that. And societally, we have changed dramatically. But do you believe that naming the right captain can be influential in the success of the hockey team?
Yeah, I think the reverse is more true. You name the wrong one, and you're screwed. You're absolutely screwed. Because then you got a guy, a flimsy, you know, everybody kind of looks. Listen, when it's a tight game, 3 minutes to go in a game, and let's say you're in the playoffs and it's a critical game and there's a bad call, you need a guy out there that goes crazy. And you know what? If he gets fined, he gets fined. But you need somebody that stands up and everybody understands that this guy is about to unleash, and you should be worried about that guy. And I just think you need that leadership in the room. You need the person when everybody else is falling apart to stand up and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. This is how we get there. And everybody believes him. That's the key. If you don't believe him, and I don't know, Bob, whether it's changed A lot of teams name the highest price guy, you know, that kind of thing.
Or the best player.
Or necessarily the best player, but not the best leader.
Exactly.
I know. But think about it. Were we just naive when we were younger? Or is that still happening today in most teams? We're just, I think, smarter and older. That's all. We're dumb and young.
Well, I guess.
Older, at least, Eugene. I don't know about the smarter. Older, at least.
I'll give you the smarter. Come on. It's the leadership that's needed. And it's not necessarily the most talented. You know, if you take a look, was George Armstrong the best player in the Toronto Maple Leafs in his
life? No, by no means. Never.
Not even close.
Not even close.
That's right. But when he spoke, he didn't speak often. But I remember when he did speak, everybody shut up. Yeah. Everybody kind of backed off because he so rarely spoke. But man, I can't remember a time of seeing George Armstrong like go apoplectic, like go crazy. He never did, but man, when he stared you down, he looked vicious.
But the captaincy, Eugene, I think has changed a lot because I think the captaincy, there's a lot of it that isn't for public consumption. I think it's so much in the room now. I think that. There's a role to be played by that person amongst the other 19 players in the dressing room. That becomes, what we see is the captaincy is the tip of the iceberg. It's below the water where the captaincy works with his teammates, I think, becomes a bigger factor.
I know. And other than the 20 guys in the room, 99% of people will never see that.
Right.
Goes on in there. And it's a question of, you know, if you call somebody out, you better be that leader, otherwise the rest of them will kill you too. But I don't know. We'll see. I think that we're going to make the right decision. I think that we are going to sign Brady to a fair contract. And I think that at the end of the day, we are going to search and destroy, trying to find two key pieces to our team that we need to fill. And that's, you know, we've got two great young centers that are stepping up big time. And you got Norris and you got Pinto. This Pinto kid, you know, he came out of the blue. You know, he didn't start being a good player until he was 15 years old. And then he comes to North Dakota and all of a sudden, something about the North Dakota water. Mark my word. I don't know. It's either that or there's truly not a lot to do out there, but they have a fantastic, you know, the best hockey program, I think, in the world. But the guy comes out of there, all of a sudden he's playing second line center. And but he's like 19.
Right.
I remember my juniors at St. Mike's were that age and
or older.
Yeah, 2021s. Yep. But in any event, I think that we'll find that missing piece and the defensive defenseman that we need.
I want to change the gears a little bit. We'll take the break first and come back with more of the owner of the Ottawa Senators. Eugene Melnyk is with us back after these messages. It's Bob McCowan. It's John Shannon on the program, whether you're watching, listening on podcast or online or in Mississauga at Saga 960. Eugene Melnyk is with us today. I want to address, I'm sure John has more hockey questions, but I want to take a moment to address the LeBreton Flats issue because the three of us have talked about this in the past. We know that the last, correct me if I'm wrong, the last round proposal, whatever things didn't resolve themselves. I'm told there are three entities, groups that are currently involved in negotiating, for lack of a better word. For that piece of property and to do a build there. What can you tell us about where you guys are at?
We're, as far as LeBreton Flats is concerned, we're nowhere. We're not involved anymore. That was a bad dream that has ended up in court. And, you know, we had a horrible partner. And unbeknownst to me, I didn't even know this person. And out of the blue, the previous management signed him up. Interesting, today, by the way, is the sixth anniversary of my liver transplant.
Wow.
Ah.
Yeah, in 30 minutes.
And you look good, too. I want to tell you that, you know.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. But, you know, in 30 minutes from now, they sliced me open. But the reason I bring it up or it came to mind is that it was during my liver transplant, when I was in the hospital, that the previous management signed a deal with this guy under my nose. I mean, I was literally right under the knife.
Yeah.
And now it's ended up in a, you know, $700 million lawsuit. As far as what we're doing in Ottawa, though, is the better question. And that is, I have about 70 acres of land around our arena in Kanata. And in 16 years that I've owned the team, Ottawa has grown westward, which is towards Kanata. Mm-hmm. And it's now that 26-minute drive that sound, you know, felt like forever is no longer a big deal. And I've spent enough time in Toronto to know what traffic is, or any other city. So I think that I like it out in Kanata, but if I can't get anything done there, I also have proposals of, you know, still staying in the Ottawa area, but going across the river into Gatineau.
Oh, really?
Is the old, remember Hull, now it's Gatineau.
Yeah, of course.
Sure. But there's some beautiful land, beautiful backdrops on Parliament Hill from there. It is closer to downtown. But I'm still committed to Kanata, and I'm looking at sometime in the next 3 to 5 years, committing to one or the other, and I'm going to have to build a new arena. I need a new arena in about 7 years from now. 5 to 7, 5 to 10, because, you know, our arena is already 26 years old. Mm-hmm. And these things usually, yeah. But it was well built, but it has a lifespan. These things usually have a lifespan, honestly, of maybe 25, 30 years.
Yep.
This thing probably has a lifespan of 40. And what I mean by that, you start spending a lot of money on maintenance. I mean, a piece of roof falls or something and you're in big trouble. So you got to spend the money to keep it up. And I just spent $11 million on a HVAC system because of COVID to clean the air quicker. You know, go figure that. But I think that that is more of a reality than LeBreton ever will be. And either we build another stadium out in Kanata on our own property that we own, or there's a great deal that comes from to the other side of the river.
Don't you think, I hate to interrupt you, but I would just say to you, Eugene, I've been to Gatineau, so I know a little bit about it, but that isn't just a river, that is a border, and that's another province, and the other official language is more dominant, and don't you think your constituency in Ottawa would have a lot Like that might not be preferable to going out to where you are now, to where the Canadian Tire Center is right now.
I know. It's all a question, though, Bob, and I get that part. But I've not had the easiest time in the city of Ottawa.
Oh, I get that.
It's not with the people, not with the fans, believe it or not. There's a hierarchy in that city. Political, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just read this literally an hour ago. You know, here I am paying through the nose in taxes out there. And they just gave the Porsche dealer a $2.6 million tax break. I'm going, well, wait, oh, it's because of all the economic benefit. What economic benefit? He's selling goddamn Porsches. You know, give me a break. Give me the tax break. I'm dying out here. I got no fans. I'm still trying to put on a show for everybody. I'm trying to get, you know, you see the concerts that are coming. Boy, all those guys that have been hibernating for a year now.
They want out. Yeah.
They're all ready to go.
Oh, my God. They're all coming at us. And we're booking left and right. And we haven't announced anything yet. In any event, my point is this, it's fairness. It's about fairness. And to me, it's not even the money, it's the fairness. And if I feel that I'm being unfairly treated, you know, I don't want to come to this party. And, but I'm going to do everything I possibly can. I don't see that border, you know, Ottawa's become very, very multilingual. I mean, you can talk 90%, it's not maybe 90, I don't know what the official number is, but everybody speaks French. Many people live in Gatineau and commute into Ottawa to work. But again, my number one preference is I want to stay in Kanata, by far my number one preference. But, you know, you read stuff like I did an hour ago, you know, Porsche dealer. I mean, really, honestly, you just gave a Porsche dealer his new dealership. He's got two. And I don't even know these people. I guess, you know, he's not going to sponsor me anymore, but I just don't think it's treated fairly, and you know, we're going to have to talk about it.
So Eugene, just to clarify, you have ruled out going downtown on the Ottawa side?
I've ruled out going to LeBreton.
Okay, because you did talk when the deal with Mr. Ruddy did break down, and the lawsuit started to exchange. You did talk about potentially having a plan of your own downtown somewhere else. Yeah.
Yes, there's a federal site which is attractive as well. But Ottawa is a funny city geographically. It's such a sprawl. There's no, you know, it's unusual, but Ottawa as a city doesn't have a commercial downtown per se.
That's
not
right.
Like traditional cities. Right. Every one of them, like, you know, you go through Winnipeg, Edmonton, Calgary, all of them have a downtown in Montreal, even Halifax. Ottawa's a sprawl. Because, you know, you got the Parliament buildings right there in the center, but that's not really, there's activity, but it's not like Toronto at all, not even close, or Montreal. So where is downtown? You know, right next to the Chateau Laurier. I think what people are talking about, as long as you're on the LRT, there is word, they haven't gotten approval yet, and that's why I'm kind of waiting, that they're going to, after, to have the LRT go all the way out to Kanata, and we would be a stop. That happens, that's a big plus, because then you take away the drive and we can use some of the parking and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of moving parts right now. And most would bore your listeners, but you know, just give us some time. We've gotten our rebuild almost complete. Now we can start focusing on our arena and everything that can go around the arena.
I mean, just hypothetically, because you brought it up, if they build the LRT all the way out to Kanata, I mean, John and I, we've made the drive. We know what it's all about. It would seem to me that the potential impact of that would be dynamic. Would you reassess staying in Kanata if there's if they start breaking ground, maybe not even a commitment to do it, but if they start moving shovels in, Eugene, does Kanata become a more appealing location for you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like I said, I'm 75%, 85% even staying in Kanata. I'm just saying there's an option for us to not stay there and move to another part of Ottawa or even across the river. These are just options, and I'm just feeling it all out. I just met with a developer over the weekend. And they presented a huge program, a plan around Kanata. you know, I'm talking about hotels and condos and this and that. And
on your land?
On my land, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how baked that plan is, but there are people that are recognizing that the landowning, people are starting to cluster out to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, believe it or not. It's there's massive, massive development going on out there. Like hundreds, if not thousands of new homes.
Which would make the move to the east end to cross the river make a little bit contradictory to what you're talking about, really, wouldn't it?
I agree with you. I agree. I'm just saying it is an option.
Yeah.
You know, it's an option. And by the way, I really believe that the next arenas that are going to be built may be the same size as the current arenas, but they'll only hold 12,000 seats. That's mm-hmm. it. I think the days of cramming 19,000 people into a building, I don't know if that's going to stick around. I just don't know. I'm a believer of more of the, almost a Winnipeg model or less, where you have the sellouts, slightly higher pricing, slightly, but you're jammed. Yeah. You know?
Your building, Eugene, respectfully, your building was always too big. It was always too big
yeah.
for all those years. I mean, and there was almost, even before you were the owner of the club, there was a boastful thing that we're going to get to 20,000. And it made no sense for the smallest market, the smallest market in the league to be the biggest arena. There was no logic to it whatsoever.
Same guys that did the deal, same management team. They bankrupted, by the way. Bankrupted the company. Like an idiot, made the biggest mistake in business I ever did. Like what moron, and I'm pointing at myself, buys a bankrupt company and then leaves the same management that bankrupted it. I mean, wow. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't need anything to figure out, you know, grade school kid will tell you that's a stupid idea. But look, it happened and we're doing the best we can out of it. I think we're going to have great crowds. Are we going to have 19,000 people? You know, you never know. But all I can do is give them the best product, the best team to cheer for. And there's nothing better than to cheer for a young team that you know is going to be around. Those young guys are going to attract all sorts of fans individually. Mm. You know, I just think it's a recipe for success. I sure as hell hope so.
Well, how confident are you that you're going to have people in your building in October?
Very confident.
And full capacity, you think?
I'll tell you what, I'm going to wait to answer you. Give me a few days because, you know, I know what's going on in Ontario. And I don't, that's why I was asking earlier whether there's a, you know, what's the reaction in Leaf Nation to Montreal opening up right away. Right. And, you know, I watch, I don't know, two minimum, maybe sometimes three games a night. I'm watching, you know, last night, here we are in Pittsburgh, and we've just doubled the capacity to 9,000 tonight.
Yeah.
I've been watching football since the fall. They've had capacity in there. I'm just hoping that my efforts over the next 2 weeks get us to the point where I can answer that question truthfully and knowledgeably, and with people in the provincial government that can give us a straight answer of what it's going to take for us to allow a safe number of fans into our building. What number? That's the key, guys. Everybody's ignoring that. You see this number that comes out on Christine's Elliot's Twitter every day. Everybody goes, oh, it was 4,000 today. Oh, it was 3,000. Oh, it was 2,000. What does that mean?
Who knows?
If somebody just came and said, everybody, you know, have a lot less anxiety. If somebody just simply said, look, we're looking for 10 straight days of under 600.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can do this. That's what I'm after. I can't run a business of our size that's dependent on the audience and on the spectators coming into our building without understanding the dynamic of what's going on externally that affects that. And I'm going to demand that. I'm in a position now, I have to demand that and say, you tell me what you're looking at so I can look at it and sweat with you. Mm-hmm. I don't mind if there's a restriction, but understand when the restrictions get lifted and to what extent do they get lifted.
Well, we're all kind of in the same boat, Mr. Mel.
I know you are. Everybody is.
Well, we don't understand the philosophy of the government. It seems to be a moving target. Every day is a different decision. You're sitting there with a Pebble Beach Golf Links hat on.
I was going to say, there's a reason I'm wearing this.
Well,
they can play there, though.
Yes, they can.
I'm a member at a golf club outside Toronto, and I can't play. Ontario, I believe, is the only jurisdiction in the world where golf courses are closed.
Yeah.
And I can't get a straight answer as to why that is the case. I'm perfectly willing to accept it if you give me some logic behind it, but I don't know what that logic is. So I wish you good luck in trying to assess the future of your hockey franchise and people in the stands with respect to the Ontario government, because I don't know where they are or what they're thinking.
Well, you know what? The only thing I can hope for is that I can get, we can get them to the point where they at least, either you admit that you know what you're doing or admit you don't know what
you're
doing.
You have no idea. Yeah. 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 Well, I suggest
this latter. You know, there's all sorts of ways that you can override these guys. I don't think they've even thought that one through yet, but you know, you're talking about your golf. That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. And I'm not a big golfer. But I thought to myself, you want to say something, Bob? You want to say something to the world? Go out and why don't you go golf at 5 a.m. before the staff comes? Go play 9 holes. Take a picture of yourself. Like at one point, you know, what's going to end up happening is people are just going to, there's going to be a collapse of confidence.
And they'll start. I think we're getting there. We're almost there now.
Yeah, I know. I know. But I wish me the best, because really all I want to know is what do you guys see as being a success? What's your vision of a success to allow me, to allow my fans to please come into my building?
Well, I think actually, without getting too technical, but I think it's more about our medical facilities not being broken down and having too many patients in them. It's not about the amount of cases. It's about whether we can handle the critical cases. And right now, we're at that threshold, Eugene. That becomes the bigger issue.
We all understand
Well, except that people are taking a lot of this stuff and saying, and businesses aside, from a personal, if we have to sacrifice 2 weeks of golf to get back to a point where we're saying that our hospitals are not at the breaking point, I'm prepared to give up 2 weeks.
Well, that's fine. For a month of golf. Except there's no evidence that of transmission in golf.
Bob, you know what?
Solve the problem where the problem exists. Don't expand the problem to where it does not exist.
Yeah, I'm going to get, you know what? If we continue this conversation, we should do it offline, because I can tell you, I have a point of view that is, you know, gets me all pumped up and gets me angry. Because I'll tell you something, go to a little country like Barbados, okay? And you know what they do when you show up? I'm going to show you. I'm not going to tell you, I'm going to show you. I'm in quarantine here. This is what I'm wearing.
Good deal.
You know what that is? That's a tracker.
Sure.
Okay, that's a tracker. And I just had another COVID test this morning. They called me. You know, the tracker, unfortunately, I put underwater on Saturday. They were at my door Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Saying, why is your tracker? Did you take it off? Show it to me, Mr. Melnick. And I had to show them. I said, here it is. I'm sorry I put it underwater. And it's, you've got to, if you're going to lock people down, do it. But to do it halfway, you know, this can't go on forever, guys. This can't.
They're here.
And I'm going to stop it. I'm going to, from our perspective, from the spectator's perspective, we can no longer afford to not allow, both mentally and financially, allow people not to be able to do what they want to do.
Mr. Melnick, we are out of time. We always enjoy every second we get a chance to spend with you. We wish you continued good health. I know you're struggling down there in Barbados with those
Have. I took time off. I took time off to speak to you.
Bless you. Thank you very much. We love you for it. We look forward to seeing you face to face very soon. Let's hope that happens. Okay.
All the best to you guys. Thank you very much.
Eugene Melnick.
Cheers.
We'll be back after these messages.
Yeah.
For Cowan and Shannon, never a dull moment with Eugene Melnick. And again, our thanks to him for
spending time
with us.
There's always a few snippets of news there when Eugene speaks. But the one thing that impacted me more than anything else was 6 years to the day of his liver transplant.
And, oh, interesting.
And, you know what? Be an organ donor, folks.
Here.
That's what matters. All the other stuff, it's business. It's, you know, but be an organ donor.
That man's life was saved, and it's remarkable. He looks as good as he did before.
10 times better.
But what he the difference is night and day. And we wish him continued good health. For Shannon, it's McCowan. We'll see you again tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.